On today's show, Judy Carter, one of America's top motivational humorists, helping corporations handle stress and change with laughter. You're listening to the Eagles Talent Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Eagles Talent Speakers Bureau for speakers who inspire, educate, and entertain. You can find us online at eaglestalent.com. Remember, you can listen to our podcast at eaglestalent.com or subscribe to it on iTunes by simply clicking Eagles Talent in the search. If you're interested in bringing any of the speakers that we have on our podcast to your event, you can do so by visiting us online at eaglestalent.com. Judy Carter sat down with our own Sheldon Senek to discuss colorful stories from her life and how she teaches the corporate market to turn negative experiences into comedy routines.
Judy Carter, welcome to the Eagles Talent Podcast. So glad you can join us today.
Hey, hi, Sheldon. Good to be here.
Judy, correct me if I'm wrong, but before you got your start in stand-up comedy, you taught high school. How did that experience prepare you for stand-up? And also, what led you to being a comedian?
Well, first of all, I was a high school teacher, and that was hard, man. That I couldn't handle all that money and prestige. My God. And I was doing stand up at night and then teaching at Harvard School for Boys during the day. I was very young, and it was problematic because I get the two of them mixed up. And so there I would be going in the high school going, "Hey, how you doing? Where are you from?" And stand up. I go, "Anybody here from homeroom?" I have to say that being the class clown is not really a good quality as a teacher. And so I got fired.
Yeah. How can you punish anybody?
Yes, exactly. It was very difficult, and it was an all boys school, and I was very young. I was 20 at the time. You know, it was just 7 years ago. that's how I got out of teaching, and then the truth is, Sheldon, a lot of people don't know this, but I was a world acclaimed magician, and I had a magic act that I had been doing actually since I was 8 years old. I had a birthday party business and business cards when I was 8 years old.
Wow.
And this is before Facebook. So I was touring around with a magic act. I was a regular on the Merv Griffin show on television. It was I had 22 appearances on this show that was called the Mike Douglas Show.
Uh-huh.
And I was schlepping around the country with like these huge props. I was doing an escape from a garbage can tied up with twist ties. I actually was traveling with a garbage can. And one day I became a stand-up comic thanks to United Airlines because they lost my luggage. And I was at a club, I think it was in Chicago, because when I said to the guy, "I can't go on, I don't have my tricks." And he was sort of a mafioso type guy. Go, "You know something, you're going on. I don't care about your little tricks."
Right.
"You know, you're going on." I go, "Oh my goodness, what am I going to do?" And so I remember, I'll never forget that night because I didn't know what to do. And I stood on stage, propless, didn't have any of my little magic acts, couldn't saw a man in half. And what I did was I started telling them the story of the magic tricks that I was going to do, but I could no longer do. And they were all laughing and laughing. And I went, "You know something? I could have a career and just do carry-on." And that's when I became a comedian, and I then went on to, boy, being the opening act for all these acts. I was on the road with Prince and Kenny Loggins, you know, Vegas.
How tough is that, being an opening act?
Well, it depends who it is. Like when I was opening for Prince, they tried to kill me. That was very scary. It was right. One specific night where they delayed the show, and this is in the, you know, in the 80s, and at this time audiences timed their drugs to come on to when the, you know, the opener right. Was off stage and they're all peaked and ready to go for the headliner.
Right.
Well, they delayed the show, so I thought it would be really funny to come out playing accordion. You know, like as a joke, you know, right. Such a cool, hip audience. So I came right. out with my accordion, and they were coming on to drugs, and they saw me with the accordion, and then they thought, I want to kill her. Someone put a tablecloth on me, lit me on fire. Someone threw shot glasses at me.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I think that's when I decided to go into the corporate market, corporate speaking market, because I have never had a job where I'm performing for Procter & Gamble right. or J&J, where nobody has tried to light me on fire. You know, I've had such a colorful life, such an amazing life, such a life that I'm grateful for.
You wrote in your first book, Stand-Up Comedy, the book, you wrote, humor is therapeutic. Even if you have no intention of ever getting up on stage, learning how to turn negative, painful life experiences into comedy routines will give you a new perspective on life. So you, with all the negative news around the world, do you think sometimes we just forget to just laugh?
Yes, because people think that life is supposed to show up funny.
Right.
Sometimes it does, you know, but mm-hmm. mostly it shows up basically in a humiliating way. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as you wash your car, it's going to rain. You're waiting for an important call. As soon as you put your cell phone on the desk, you go to the bathroom, you pull down your pants, the phone's going to ring. And now you're hopping to let everybody in the cubicles looking at you weird. You know, life is funny if you look for it. So people forget, and this is what I teach in my talks, that laughter is your attitude. Mm-hmm. Life just shows up. And there's some people who can look at it and find the laughter. And then there's other people who will find the tragedy.
Right.
Life shows up, and then it's how we look at it, how we choose to look at it, that you know, makes it decide whether it's a comedy or a tragedy. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like people have a choice. You can get stressed out and laugh, and you know, or you can get stressed out and, you know, drink
well,
and laugh. Whatever your choice is, but well, I suggest laughter.
Well, thinking about comedy and tragedy, you know, historically, comedy has really helped the country in its eras of despair. Like, for instance, out of the Great Depression, we had George and Gracie Allen, Jack Benny, Charlie Chaplin. So you fast forward to now, with the constant talk of economic turmoil, how important is comedy now?
Oh, it's always important. One of my favorite movies is Preston Sturges' Sullivan's Travels, mm-hmm. where, you know, we have this director who directs comedy and he feels he's not doing anything with his life until he actually ends up in somehow in a prison. He gets to see that the one light of hope in these prisoners are watching his comedy movies. You know, if that's why I think nowadays everybody watched Jon Stewart to get the news.
Right.
Because the news, just looking at it, you know, straight on, like, right. here's what happened today, without a comedy spin, is sort of like looking directly into the sun. It's like, oh, no, I'm melting. I can't, oh, Iraq, Iran, nuclear. Oh, these morons running for the president. No, the country, all this stuff.
Well, and when you do keynote presentations or workshop, it's kind of interesting because you get to do something incredible as a humorous speaker, and that's tell it like it is. So that really has to be kind of liberating. as a speaker.
No, I don't tell it like it is in the corporate market. Oh. Unfortunately, it's interesting because I just did a tour of bringing comedy to Russia and to Sweden, and it's so interesting because, you know, I teach comics and speakers how to add humor to their speeches. And in the corporate market in America, unlike in the rest of the world, it's pretty much regulated by HR. You know, I feel corporate America has become humor impaired because sometimes I'll be doing a speech and, you know, and people are unsure if they should laugh. They're going like, wait a second, is it okay to laugh?
Could put it out there, but it's how they respond is a little shaky.
No, it's not how it's like they want to know, is it okay to laugh? Because there's been, you know, is HR laughing? Is HR laughing? It's that humor and laughter. We've had so much, you know, lawsuits and inappropriate comedy in the workplace that it actually in the corporate field has become an issue. And that's why a lot of companies will hire me to, and they say to me, like big utility companies that have me come in and do keynotes to their entire organization, because they said, you know, Judy, we've had so many people come in here and talk about, like, you can't joke about this, you have to be appropriate. We've had lawsuits. Some people are very inappropriate, that nobody jokes anymore.
Wow.
The workplace have become so serious. And so can you come in and bring back humor?
Right.
Can you show us, like, how we can have laughter and not offend anybody? Because that's a huge issue in American corporations, you know. And so this is what I do. I come in. And I will actually, I'm like an idiot savant with comedy. I'm able to write jokes about anything. So in other words, like I had a paint company say to me, Judy, we have a new product coming out, titanium dioxide. It's a chemical we put in paint that has microscopic hiding power. Can you do something funny on that? And I do. You know, titanium dioxide has microscopic hiding power. Great, I'm going to put some on my butt. Judy, have you lost weight? Jenny Craig? No, titanium dioxide, it's fabulous. So I will get companies to look at their products in a totally different way. On another hand, listen to this, Sheldon. This is just, this was the hardest thing I've had to do at a corporate gig. I had a company, and of course, all this downsizing that's happening to companies, the client said to me, you know, right before you go on, we're going to announce that nobody's getting their bonus this year. So why don't you do something funny with that?
And I'm going,
that is really difficult to do.
I would say so.
That was the hardest, I would say, to write a joke. That was the hardest thing a client has ever asked me to do, and I did it successfully. But I have to tell you, it took me so long to squeeze my funny brain cells to come up with an approach that wouldn't trivialize how the audience felt about it. And yet what humor does is to get us to laugh at the elephant in the room, and that's what I always ask a client. I'll say to them, you know, what's going on that's causing people stress? Because that's what I talk about, using humor to decrease stress. What's causing stress? And so in this case, it was, you know, a pay cut. Then it's my job to find a way that we can laugh at it, because when you laugh at a problem, it becomes smaller in size.
Right.
So the way I approached, you want to know how I approached it?
Yeah.
It was tricky. I had to sneak it in what I call a list of three. I said, this was a cosmetics company, and they had something called a certain kind of selling, which was virtual selling, where I said, oh, And I said, what was it virtual? So, and maybe it was another word, but what the word meant, that it's not mascara, it's the idea of beauty.
Right.
Right. It's not about the lipstick. It's the idea of beauty. And apparently it's just the idea of a bonus. And so I threw that in there, right, like that. They right. weren't expecting it. And the entire audience fell off their chairs laughing. They didn't expect it.
Right.
And they liked, you know, I mean, I said, how are you going to pay your rent with that? Yes, here's the idea of my mortgage, you know. Right. And a conceptual selling. Yes, here's the concept of my and they felt, the audience felt that I was on their side, and the client felt that I kind of popped that hole in their stress balloon and deflated it.
Right.
And after that, I have to tell you, the entire mood changed, because that's a real example of the value of bringing humor into a corporate meeting. Because once you laugh at a problem, you're not, you know, your employees aren't coming from anger.
Uh-huh.
Then they can go to solutions. So, you know, people think of humor as like, oh, I'm going to tell some dirty jokes, or it's nothing right. like that. Humor is really something that I teach people how to do. And it's really about how to look at your life, your problems, your work, your career, you know, mm-hmm. with a different attitude.
So who are some of your comic heroes?
Oh, well, of course, you know, I love the old time girls. I grew up, you know, as a little girl, my first comic that I ever saw was Gracie Allen.
Oh, yeah.
And she was inspiring to me. And of course, Lucy, uh-huh. you know, everybody wanted to be Lucy. And now I have to say, you know, my heroes, I love political comics. So mm-hmm. I do love Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. I do love Bill Maher.
Oh, sure.
You know, I love Tina Fey. I think she's one of the brightest, funniest things happening.
Right, absolutely.
You know, I grew up, my group of comics, you know, Robin Williams, mm-hmm. Jay Leno, Elaine Boozler. These were the people that we went through the University of Comedy School of Hard Knocks. You right. know, I was with them. We would work out our material. I'm from Los Angeles. We'd work it out in, you know, at the Improv and the uh-huh. Comedy Store. And, you know, it Albert Brooks, oh, jeez, yeah. is he brilliant. Steve Martin, to me, is consistently brilliant.
Right.
And
Renaissance person, really, right?
I was just at, just yesterday, I went to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences mm-hmm. on Carl Reiner.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Reiner gave me my first break in show business. He
oh, really?
Put me in a TV series with Andy Kaufman and, I don't know if your listeners remember him,
sure.
but Jim Carrey did a movie about
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And Carl Reiner is, we forget, you know, he wrote and produced the Dick Van Dyke Show and.
Great comedy show, too.
Yeah, I mean, I just have real respect for the old-timers, real respect for the history mm-hmm. of my industry, and Sid Caesar, Imogen Coppa. I mean, those were the pioneers of what's happening in comedy right now.
Right.
You can see these things happening in comedy right now, and they were all started by these people. Gilda Radner, I dedicated my second book to Gilda.
Mm-hmm.
She was a good person. I was opening for a band and in New York
mm-hmm.
called The Roaches, who was on Saturday Night Live, and the audience was really mean to me. And, you know, very often when you're the opening act, they don't give you any respect. They talk through your show. I came off stage, I was crying, and this woman, like, said, "What's the matter, honey? Come talk to me." We went into a backstage bathroom, which was in New York, essentially just a toilet.
Right.
She sat on the toilet. She pulled me on her lap, a total stranger. I'm crying. "Oh, they didn't let your relatives in?" "No, they didn't. And nobody listened there." And then I looked up and I went, "Oh my God, you're Gilda Radner." Oh
wow.
My God. That was Gilda. That she would take a total stranger.
right.
hold her on a toilet and give her a hug. That's that kind of woman. That's why, you know, we've got to laugh, because in this era where bad things happen to good people, you know, mm-hmm. where things where we can't make sense of the world, you know?
Mm-hmm. So
that's why we need laughter.
I was watching a presentation of yours recently, and you brought up such a great point about what people want. And it seems you state, you know, it seems the only time we're truly asked is when a waiter poses this question. Is it that we don't speak up about our wants, or we'd rather live in despair because no one but the waiter bothers to ask us?
Yes, I find that's a gender issue, to tell you the truth.
Hmm.
I think it's a gender issue. I think women will take will ask the waiter what do you think I should have?
Right.
Right? I mean, which is stupid. Why are we asking a waiter what choices we should make when all his choices have had him end up being your waiter? You know what?
Right.
Women will take a survey of the entire table. Like, what are you having? Oh no, I don't want. What are you having? Like, we want to fit in.
Right.
You know, you ask a guy. What, you know, if your husband goes out with, you know, other their friends and ask him, you know, what did everybody have for lunch? He won't know. He doesn't care.
Right.
Women care. Women will launch into a whole story about money. And but this is the thing. I do a lot of also women's presentations.
Mm-hmm.
For women's events, a lot of put on by hospitals, sort of Saturday for Me and Women's Wellness Day and all that. And
mm-hmm.
and I want to teach women that, you know, don't go outside of yourself to ask, you know.
Right.
Find out what you want by asking somebody else. Or women will even ordering ask a table, you know, two tables away, total strangers, what is that you're having? And I teach women to, you know, listen to yourself. It's okay to ask for something
right.
different. And so that essentially is leadership quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, very often being funny is taking a stand, saying what you really mean.
Mm-hmm.
That every comic, I essentially teach the trade secrets of comedians, because within that you will find that comedians take a stand, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's why they call it stand up. They take a stand for what they believe in. And I think women a lot of women do very often, you know, are so used to patty caking. We learned mm-hmm. that when we're very young to be in sync with somebody else, that sometimes it's difficult for us to actually say what it is we want. And I know we drive men crazy.
What are some tips that you can provide to deal with negative people at work?
To deal with negative people at work. Well, one thing is that I find is first of all important is to validate people. Very often we find someone negative and they have a real problem, you know,
right.
And it's not just, hey, just tell a joke and put on a red nose. I don't find, you know, humorists who give that advice. I think that's unrealistic. I think when somebody is, you know, negative, they have a real problem. One thing that I teach people do is that I have learned from being a stand-up comic is how to handle the hecklers in your life.
Hmm.
I'm an expert at handling hecklers. If somebody in the audience wants to, like, hey, you think you're funny? You ain't so funny. I'm like,
you've heard it.
Oh, baby, bring it on.
Right.
You do not know who you're dealing with. First of all, I'm sober, you're drunk. I've already got a lot more brain cells happening right now. So I'm going like, baby, bring it on. However, the same techniques that I use on stage can be used to handle, not necessarily, I mean, I think negative people, I think you're never going to change anybody's point of view.
Mm.
But I think if somebody is coming onto you with complaints, aggression, things like that.
Take them to a bar.
The one thing that I've learned, like, especially, Let's take a real life example to give your listeners a tip on this. This is called, technique is called mirror, validate and exaggerate.
Okay.
So what you'd want to do if somebody comes to you and says something insulting, usually that person's a relative who feels they can tell you whatever they want because they love you so much.
Right.
Anyway, Judy, have you gained some weight? Now, usually what people do is they get defensive. Oh, no, I haven't. How dare you say that to me? You know, right. you're fat, too. I don't want to give your listeners an idea. I'm fat. I'm not. But anyway, so once you are defensive, that game you're playing is called you lose. Oh. So one thing that you can do is you validate the other person, and that creates comedy. This is how it sounds. Mm-hmm. They say, so, Judy, have you gained weight? Oh, my God, I have. Thank you so much for noticing. Isn't that great? All that late-night snacking has finally paid off. Woo-hoo! I've cured my anorexia. Thank you. They will never bother you again. Why? Because you turned it into your game.
Right.
Somebody is coming at you with negativity, and you take that negativity and become negative yourself and throw it back. You are playing their game, and that game is called you lose.
Right.
However, if you just validate what they say, because isn't that what we all want it to be heard?
Right.
Then that leaves the ball in their court. That leaves them with their hostility and you to have a good laugh and able to continue having your own mood without, you know, having their negative interference, you know. But then again, if you're looking to change somebody, you won't. Right. The only person you can change is yourself and your attitude about how you handle those difficult people that are in your life.
Well, Judy, it's time now for a game I like to call Judy's Take. Here's how it goes. I'm going to throw out some news headlines or questions, and I'd like your take. Okay, you ready?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
I think we're going to have to edit this one.
Yeah, we might. the Republican debate. Who's the most entertaining candidate and why?
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's so funny you mention that because I was just thinking about, like, giving comics tips on who to vote for, meaning who would give us the most material. Well, Mitt Romney.
Yeah, really, Romney. We have Perry.
I am hoping he doesn't get the nomination. And this has nothing to do with my political beliefs. This has to do with my comedy beliefs.
Exactly.
He's going to be like another, you know, Gore. It's like, okay, we make fun that he doesn't have pores and he's stiff. Right? But there's just like, there's not a lot there to make fun of, right?
Right.
Then again, who's the Godfather guy? Who's he?
Is it Kane? I believe it's.
Yeah. Herman Cain?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm hoping he gets the nomination. Have you heard him sing a song about pizza to the John Lennon song, Imagine?
No, I didn't hear that.
There's no mozzarella. Oh, my goodness. I'm praying he gets the nomination simply for the sake of material. Because he's always saying something like, what the heck is he talking about? He's not even one of his ideas for his plans he got from SimCity, his budget plan he got from SimCity. This is material. So this has nothing to do with my political beliefs, but it definitely has to do with my comedy beliefs. And I think as a comedian, my fingers are crossed. You know, just like with Sarah Palin.
Right. Oh, geez.
Yeah. I mean, not a good candidate, let's face it, you know, but the truth is
great for comedy.
Good, bad for the country, good for comedy. Right. So I am at a crossroads of where my allegiance lies.
Right. Social media, are we more or less connected?
Oh, we are so less connected. I just tweeted something, which is at Judy Carter. If something happens in your life, and you don't tweet about it. Did it happen? Do we all need so much validation that, yes, our life is important because someone else is reading about it? Have we? I mean, I was speaking to a college on Buddhism and comedy. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of corporate calls for Buddhism and comedy.
Together, right.
Yeah. And I said, all right, I want to know it. And this is a college kid class, uh-huh. You know, and they said, tell me a joke. And they all stood there looking at me like they couldn't. I said, you don't know any jokes? And they were blank, total blank. 10 minutes later, someone said, oh, wait a second. I can get you a joke. There's an app for that.
Oh, no.
That story tells you everything you need to know about my feelings about social media. I think it's, in some uses, it's terrific.
Uh-huh.
But I think, as Aaron Sorkin says, offline is the new online. This said by someone right. speaking on a podcast.
And we'll tweet this when we're done.
Irony for you.
The next one. Cast replacements on television shows. It didn't work for Dukes of Hazzard. Will it work for Two and a Half Men?
You know, it's funny. NPR asked me that question. Mm-hmm. And now Sheldon is asking me. You know something? I have spent so little of my brain energy caring about Two and a Half Men.
You're probably with the rest of the country. Right?
I have never watched that show.
Uh-huh.
I was sort of fascinated with Charlie Sheen because I think anybody having a meltdown right. is like interesting to watch. It kind of brings back the warm, fuzzy feelings from my childhood.
Right. There's where the real story is, right?
That's a real story. I find it very interesting that they have all these sitcoms about men bringing up children because, boy, that's really reality TV, isn't it?
Right. Wasn't that Punky Brewster?
I never saw that show either. I'm more of an HBO sort of girl, but I don't know. I just don't particularly care about that. I know NPR asked me, and I had to call up all my friends and say, you know, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? I don't know. I think Ashton Kutcher has more problems with his marriage than he does with his sitcom.
Next one, Wall Street. Is it a place for business, crime, or camping?
Hey, Sheldon, that was a good joke. You know that joke you did was called what I call a list of three, where the third one is the spin? Excellent.
Thank you.
I think you need to give up your job at the Eagles Talent Agency and, you know, come do some comedy. That was excellent. You know, I'm all for protests because, you know, I grew up, you know, protesting, you know, uh-huh. hell no, we won't go. I wrote that. but the truth is, as everybody else, I think people are, as the Wall Street protest or as the Tea Party protest, I think people are fed up, you know, like, oh, we don't have jobs, we don't have any money, we're seeing everybody, the rich people have so much privilege, we don't have that, and we're seeing our lives so stressed, so we want to protest. And whether you're, you know, left or right, Tea Party, Wall Street, you know, we want to protest. But I think the issues are that we're not very clear exactly what we're protesting.
Right.
Because we don't want what we have. What do you want? Not sure, but we just like what we have. And so I am very supportive. I mean, I'm in awe of what has happened in the Middle East. These are people putting their life, their life has gotten right. so bad that they prefer to be dead than to continue the life that they have.
Right, right.
And I my hat's off to them. But the scary part is, and I'm not a political commentator, I'm no Rachel Maddow, but I think the commentary is that I have is that it's easy to say what you're against. It's harder to say what you're for.
Good point.
And I think the things that you're for aren't, you know, sitting around protesting, but really, you know, putting your time on the line. I mean, people in the Middle East and Egypt, Tanzania, you know, Libya, not Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in Tanzania. But they have put their life on the line. Right. And I'm just saying to the people, you know, to us who are unhappy with what's going on, what are you putting on the line? Your time, your energy, your writing skills. What are you putting on the line, you know, to make the world a better and funnier place?
Okay, last one. Reality TV, good or bad for America? And do you have a favorite?
Well, my spouse just got an Emmy for a TV show.
So careful what you say.
To tell you the truth, we don't watch reality TV. I don't find entertainment in watching other people's misfortunes, right. You know? I just don't. I, you know, come from a theater background, so I'm a great fan of a truly well-written show. And I this is a really bad finale to your podcast, Sheldon, because it's like, oh my, I've never watched American Idol. I just don't care. I can't, I guess the only reality show I watch are comedy shows such as, you know, Jon Stewart or Rachel Maddow or, you know, Bill Maher or things like that. Boy, that's a thud. This is just one. And the final question.
This is it. We'll book her.
Oh my God, this will be amazing. You know, I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Oprah, you know, put me on the map when she held up my book and, you know, said that, boy, this book can, you know, make you funny. And up until that, I had never watched her show. So, you know, it's. Thud this is. I'm not even digging it out any better. It's just getting worse and worse. This is what comics do. This is the worst thing comics do. They'll end a joke, their last joke, and they think it's their best, and it's a thud, right? And they try and dig themselves out by telling another joke that it's a thud. And now they're going on forever. It's just bad.
Well, Judy, you were truly funny and talented. It's been a real pleasure interviewing you. And thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Sheldon. And you might want to think about that career in stand-up comedy.